Welcome to the free version of Sunday night's main event. If you like what you hear, there's plenty more where this came from. Join us at patreon.com/snmeradio and get a commercial-free extended version of this show each and every week, plus numerous other weekly podcasts for only $1 a week. Sign up now at patreon.com/snmeradio.
And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this. You are cleared.
This is Sunday night's main event.
In clear violation of the law.
With Jason Agnew.
I have a microphone, and I can be louder than each and every one of you.
On TSN Radio.
I'm not finished with you!
Cody and Brody get bloody. Let's get ready for a dynamite anniversary. And we're halfway through the WWE draft. And does anyone care? Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sunday night's main event. We are broadcasting across Canada on TSN Radio, and find us online at snmeradio.com. Jason Agnew back here for another week of wrestling chatter to take a look back at Jericho's 30-year anniversary and look ahead to the second half of the bumbling WWE draft. To do so with me this week is one of the hosts of our Patreon podcast, All Elite Weekly, Joe Aguinaldo. And along with that, I'll be joined later in the show by Dave Meltzer to chat about some legal matters in the wrestling world and try to make sense of the WWE draft. Plus, we've got a Chris Jericho edition of Turnbuckle Trivia. All of that is to come for the next 2 hours right here on Sunday night's main event. We're going to take a break, we're going to pay some beer bills, and then we're going to come on back and give you the week in wrestling news. You're listening to it, Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Octo is an angry octopus. Usually he's quite surly.
What did you say to me?
But when he gets mad...
You ain't so smart, is you?
He becomes angry.
Go home and brush your sister's hair.
It's been said that his sour attitude is due to a slight disagreement with the Great Lakes Brewers.
Those guys better have eyes in the back of their head.
They said they would use 8 ingredients and Octo's beer would be 8%.
But it ain't!
Octo likes the number 8.
What's not to like about it?
The Brewers apologized for the 8, but that made Octo more irate.
Hey, you wanna go me?
Nevertheless, there's still something likable about Octo.
Your hat looks like a toilet.
Well, sort of.
Sit down!
Octopus wants to fight by Great Lakes Brewery.
That's right!
And now, your wrestling roundup on Sunday night's main event.
Yeah, welcome back. You are listening to Sunday night's main event. We're talking pro wrestling. We're doing so on TSN Radio. And folks, as far as the WWE draft goes, remember when this was a big event? Each and every year, the WWE had a draft. Major moves from Raw to SmackDown. We thought maybe NXT would get involved this year. Really, it's just another SmackDown, and it's going to be just another Raw on Monday night, and every move is very strategic. And the draft was so strange this year, with people being drafted to a brand they're already on. I despise the format, but let me fill you in on who was drafted, when, and where they're going. So there was a certain pool of people that were made available, which is strange in itself. And there's another pool that's available on Monday night. So here is who is either going or, I guess, staying on Raw because they had to redraft people to the show. What a weird format. Drew McIntyre, Asuka, The Hurt Business, drafted together, by the way, strange in itself. AJ Styles makes the move over to Raw, as does Naomi. Baszler and Jax stay put. Ricochet, Mandy Rose, Miz and Morrison make the move. Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods make the move over, not with Big E. That was, of course, the biggest talk, I think, of draft night on SmackDown was the fact that the New Day has been broken up. We also got Dana Brooke. Was just moved over 2 weeks ago. She's staying on Raw. Great, Dana. Angel Garza, Humberto Carrillo, Drew Gulak, that is, and Tucker, which is another story because that breaks up Tucker and Otis, and it's very clear that they have no idea what to do with Otis, and they are locked in and stuck with this Money in the Bank. He didn't even go to court this week like he was supposed to. So many stops and starts with this Otis character. All right, going the other way to SmackDown. Reigns stays put. Seth Rollins moves over. As you can see, that's basically justifying AJ Styles going the other way. Sasha Banks is staying put. Bianca Belair moves, which would mean, I would think, that with Kingston and Woods going the other way with the tag championship, we'll see the Street Profits move on Monday to justify that, considering that Montez and Bianca are a couple. Jey Uso stays put. Rey and Dominic Mysterio come on over as Big E stays put. Otis stays put. Murphy, of course, comes over as well. So if you thought we were getting away from the Rollins, Rey, Dominic, and Murphy storyline, it's just going to move over to Friday nights as opposed to Monday nights. Kalisto is already there. So this actually leaves a few people up in the air, including Kalisto's pals, or former pals maybe, on the Lucha House Party. They were not drafted. Neither was Mickey James or Shorty G. That's got to be the worst, just to be absolutely forgotten, because it's not everyone like Heath Slater who can make an angle out of this and be the free agent, because I don't even think they're going to highlight Shorty G and Mickey James. Mickey James just absolutely forgotten, and Shorty G, he needs to get out of there. All right, so let's rewind back to Monday now, because we actually did see a significant reveal, and that was Mustafa Ali as the leader of Retribution. Now, later in the week, Ali put up a drawing on his Twitter of the primary Retribution members, and missing from the photo was Mercedes Martinez. Now, Martinez, who had appeared alongside Dominik Dijakovic, Shane Thorne, Dio Madden, and Mia Yim on a previous week's Raw, according to PW Insider, Martinez is now back on the NXT roster. Perhaps WWE will be able to reuse her Retaliation nickname. Yeah, that was going to be her name in Retribution. Retaliation. Mia Yim is supposed to be called The Reckoning. Can you hear the smile on my face right now? Just at how ridiculous these names are, how I'm reading these names out in a news package. You got to figure, though, that Mercedes Martinez is just elated to hear that she's going back to NXT and not being a part of this absolute predestined failure of an angle that Retribution will be. Speaking of NXT, yeah, Mercedes is going to be there. You know who won't be? Ridge Holland. Oh my goodness. So if you watched NXT on Wednesday night, you no doubt noticed that after Ridge Holland tried to catch Oney Lorcan, he collapsed. He was taken to the back on a stretcher with his leg and was wrapped up from basically his hip to his ankle. Well, what seemed to be a very simple and innocent catch absolutely destroyed the leg of Ridge Holland. Here is the damage diagnosis. Holland suffered a left ankle dislocation and fracture and a right knee patellar dislocation and patellar tendon rupture. Yikes. It was said that the knee dislocation was put back into place at ringside and the ankle dislocation was put back into place in the emergency room. WWE then announced later in the week that Holland underwent surgery on Friday to put his leg back together again. Basically, his leg became Humpty Dumpty and he fell off a wall, and oh my goodness. I've just never read anything like this with so many injuries on such an innocent move. Such an innocent-looking move. And it's not like Oney Lorcan is a huge guy. He just clearly came down on his leg absolutely wrong. In other injury news, it looks like Angel Garza's injury was not as bad as first expected. As you may remember, Garza looked to tear his quad in a tag match at Clash of Champions. However, it now looks as if it's only a partial tear of his quad, so Garza will be back sooner than initially expected. It was also revealed on NXT that Finn Balor has a broken jaw, and Kyle O'Reilly suffered an injury in the main event of TakeOver, but the injury was not revealed. Concussion. So we'll see what comes about and how long Kyle O'Reilly is out. Mickey James also won't be on TV for a couple weeks, not because she hasn't been drafted, but she recently broke her nose in a match. In a rather strange and unexpected news item, Renee Paquette is going to be back hosting on SmackDown. She'll be doing the Fox pre-special for what they're calling their season premiere for SmackDown coming up this week. It looks like she's working with Fox. My most curious thing that I'm going to take away from this, though, is she going to be Renee Young or is she going to be Renee Paquette? Very curious to see how this breaks down, and I'm very, very surprised that she is back doing pre-shows, even if it is with Fox. Surprising. But probably Fox's decision, and she still had a contract working with them from what she was doing with WWE backstage. Remember, AEW will be celebrating the one-year anniversary of Dynamite this week, and they are dishing out what looks to be their version of Clash of Champions. Check this out. Jon Moxley is defending the AEW World Championship against Lance Archer. FDR are defending their AEW Tag Team titles against the Best Friends. Cody is defending the TNT Championship against Orange Cassidy. And Big Swole will take on Hikaru Shida for the Women's Championship. We can also expect the announcement of the final two participants in the nine-man number one contender tournament. The tournament will begin with four qualifying matches on the October 21st Dynamite, the semifinals on the 28th, and then they'll have a week to promo before the final match at AEW Full Gear on November 7th. Essentially, we can look at that tournament and know the whole thing does seem to be constructed around the ongoing tension between Hangman Page and Kenny Omega, and it's very interesting. And very exciting to see how they play this out. Of course, I'm sure Joe Aguinaldo, one of the hosts of All Elite Weekly, co-hosting with me this week, will have a lot to say about AEW and that tournament, and we shall do so in the second hour of today's show. Few legal notes here before we finish up the news pack. Candy Cartwright is suing Matt Riddle, WWE, Gabe Sapolsky, and Evolve for $10 million per defendant, that's $40 million total, in a sexual assault lawsuit. In a press conference on Thursday in Chicago, Cartwright, whose real name is Samantha Tavell, and her attorney discussed her side of the story that first emerged in mid-June during the Speaking Out movement. Many of the stories about this particular case we reported here on the show in previous reports about the news item, but there is a new development that popped up in this statement in the suit that Cartwright claims she had bookings with both WWE and Evolve on January 31st, 2020, but she refused to perform sexual acts on Riddle and had her bookings canceled due to, quote, issues with the talent, end quote. That was because Riddle allegedly told WWE and Evolve that because Cartwright wouldn't perform sexual acts on him, he didn't want her working for either group, and both groups complied. I'm sure it wasn't exactly like that, but that is the gist of what she is trying to accuse Riddle of in this statement. Now, at the time of this recording, neither Riddle or his attorney have made a public statement. However, in a statement to the Wrestling Observer, WWE claimed they have not been served with a lawsuit by Ms. Tavell. However, if served, they will vigorously defend themselves and contest it. Fightful also got a quote from Gabe Sapolsky, which just said news to me that this was coming at him. Keeping with the courts, former WWE and Impact Wrestling star Alberto Del Rio, also known as Alberto El Patron in the ring, has been indicted on one count of aggravated kidnapping and four counts of sexual assault, according to the Bexar County, that's in Texas, District Attorney's Office. The charges stem from a May 3rd incident in which he allegedly sexually assaulted a woman he was in a relationship with after he accused her of being unfaithful, an incident she said wasn't isolated to that night. I'll save you the details of what went on here, but it is ripped right out of a movie, a horror movie at that. Horrendous. If convicted in the first degree, he faces a maximum sentence of 5 to 99 years and or a $10,000 fine. That's a pretty broad scope of punishment, just saying. Anyhow, we'll continue to follow along the cases with Del Rio and Riddle as they progress. But now we shall follow along with this hour of programming and take another break. Coming on back, though, Joe Aguinaldo is going to join me in this first hour, and we'll take a look at the WWE draft, at least part one of it, and look ahead to part two coming up on Raw, because it used to be a very big night for WWE that would pop ratings once a year. Well, not so much anymore, as we found out on a very anticlimactic Friday night. We'll talk about that. We'll look ahead to Monday night. All of that is to come, plus Dave Meltzer and Turnbuckle Trivia. You are listening to Sunday Night's Main Event. We're doing so on TSN Radio.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we realised that our extra-large pizza is 2 whole inches longer than the so-called extra-large from the big pizza conglomerates. How do they even call theirs extra-large when Pizzaville gives you 18 whopping inches, steaming hot? Because, let's be honest, who wouldn't want 2 more inches?
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Speaking of Pizzaville, if you're an Ontario resident and would like to win a $25 gift card for Pizzaville, then you need to send out a tweet right now. Tweet, I'm listening to @SNME Radio. Now give me my @Pizzaville pizza. Everyone that tweets will go into a draw, and one lucky winner will win a $25 Pizzaville gift card. The draw is going to be held Monday at noon. Remember, send out the tweet right now. I'm listening to @SNME Radio. Now give me my @Pizzaville pizza.
The first pick of the last round, Monday Night Raw, selects the new SmackDown Tag Team Champions, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods.
Wait a minute. That means the SmackDown Tag Team titles go to Monday Night? This night just keeps getting more unfair.
What? You didn't say E's name. Say E's name. Say E's name.
And the second pick, SmackDown selects Big E.
Maxwell Jones.
Welcome back to Sunday Night's Main Event. I am happy to be joined by this week to talk all things draft and beyond by one of the hosts of All Elite Weekly. It is one of our patron podcasts. It happens every week reviewing Dynamite. Joe Aguinaldo joins me this week. Hello, Joe.
What's up, Jason? How you doing?
I'm doing very well. I know you were just really keen to talk about the draft this week because it's such monumental viewing in the world of wrestling now.
Oh my God. You know what? Okay. And again, this is me being the positive guy.
Oh boy.
It, generally speaking, in the world of the WWE universe, the draft was what it was. It pushed some storylines, it moved some stuff around. Cool, whatever. But at the end of the day, like, I mean, now just, you know, just as a wrestling fan, I'm just so not into the draft because, like, there's a few reasons, but number one, you really didn't make crazy, crazy changes, right? Number one. And number two, like, there aren't any, like, you know, Seth Rollins moved to SmackDown. SmackDown, yeah. Right? Fine, no problem. But, like, it's not like he's not like a big star, like, say, an Undertaker or a Rock or an Austin, where when that happened, you're all like, ooh. This was like, yeah, whatever. And then it was a spoiler because it was like, okay, I guess that means the Mysterios are going to move and that Murphy's going to move. Right?
It shouldn't have meant that. I mean, that's the thing, right?
It shouldn't have. But yeah. Like the thing is, you know, that's a main storyline going on right now, right? So I'm not saying like I knew for sure, but in my head, I was like, oh, well, Ray's going. I wonder if the Mysterios are going to go. And then all of a sudden they get drafted. And I'm like, all right, I guess they're just moving that storyline to SmackDown. And it was like, all right, whatever. Right?
Yeah, the draft is very inconsequential. That is one of the problems. All of the moves, it's like, I was going to say chess moves. This is checkers because it's not as complicated as chess. You know, one guy moves, the tag team champions, the New Day, which we'll get into them breaking up, but the New Day moves over to Raw, Kofi and Xavier. And if you look at Bianca Belair moving to SmackDown, that means obviously on Monday, the Street Profits are going to move as well to keep a couple together and to balance out the championship. So it's very predictable. I think is what we're saying. Once you see one moves, you can predict the next.
Yeah, like, and I mean, even like during the like the Talking Smack, they did a supplemental, and Murphy's on SmackDown. So look, they moved the entire storyline from Raw to SmackDown.
And Tucker, right? Tucker is moved to Raw. I think that's a bigger story. Tucker moving to Raw is death for Tucker and WWE. Also moving The Miz and John Morrison over to Raw just shows me repeatedly that they have no idea what to do with Otis.
No, I mean, that whole storyline. Yeah, look, when he won the the Money in the Bank, I'll admit, I popped, I laughed, I thought it was a good idea.
That's the wrong reaction, Joe. Exactly what you said there. You laughed. That is not a gimmick that you should be laughing over. Listen, you know me. I love comedy in the world of wrestling, but it's mid-card comedy. Like, that's where it belongs. And Otis can be an opener. He can maybe be a mid-card guy. He can be the one that the fans love when he does his dumb caterpillar thing and, you know, eats his steak and shakes or whatever he does. But the fact that he's holding on to Money in the Bank, which essentially took over for King of the Ring, of being the element that you give to a brand new star that you want to rocket to the top, was ridiculous and has only caused problems.
It has, and actually coming back to your Tucker point too, is that, like, I mean, Otis at least is, you know, he's got some charisma. People notice him. Tucker is like, you know, like, oh yeah, that's right, he's Otis's tag partner. That's sort of my attitude about Tucker, and I feel bad about that.
Tucker, I'd love to see him go flirt with Mandy.
That, you know what? That was actually something I thought of. It's like, I wonder if they rekindle that. And now you have this weird, you know, like Otis, Tucker, Mandy triangle thing. But that would also be, you know, a lot more complicated than the creative tends to be.
Yeah, so it won't happen. It won't. I mean, Mandy moving away shed that entire angle. Then it moved to a court angle with Miz and Morrison. Now you've removed Miz and Morrison. They got rid of the sketch that they were going to do. At least they followed up and didn't just forget about it. Like, they said that, what was the term that was used there? It was a continuance. Miz's lawyer filed a continuance for the Otis trial. So at least they kind of said
they
wasn't going to happen.
They kind of covered it, yeah.
But it was clearly something. And this is all... Once again, we come back to it over and over. There's just no long-term planning that happens, and that's why you get storylines that stop and start like this.
Yeah, no, I agree. And the last thing I'm going to mention, too, about the draft is, like, you know, back in the day, and, you know, I hate to sound like the old guy that I am, but I'm going to do it anyways for this particular segment. You know, back in the day when, say, someone got drafted, there would be that reaction of, like, I don't want to go there, or, you know, I'm really excited. Like, other than maybe AJ Styles, you didn't really get those reactions. And well, I think that's part of what made those drafts kind of fun to watch.
I mean, AJ Styles' reaction was probably genuine, considering he wants to watch his kids on Friday night play football, and he wants to get as far away from Paul Heyman as possible.
Heyman, yeah.
So that was, you know, a complete legit reaction for everyone else. I mean, they've also done really silly things just recently, moving Mandy, moving Dana Brooke, having Kevin Owens come over, Braun Strowman was on Raw, and it's just, it's completely meaningless when there is no actual division. They make up their own rules, so none of these rules on the draft matter.
Yeah, and I mean, you said the word actually just a couple seconds ago, inconsequential.
Yeah,
that's the problem. It's there's nothing, you know, there's nothing of note or of gravitas to any of these picks. Other than, oh, cool, like, Seth's moving to SmackDown. Great. You know, like, that was it.
The only one thing that people have been talking about, and I agree, I kind of saw it coming, especially after Kofi and Xavier returned after Big E's solo brawl match, which just seemed to be a bit of a parody of AEW's parking lot brawl. But you do have the New Day breaking up. What were your thoughts on the New Day? A good or a bad thing for all three of these guys?
You know what? Like, I'll admit, when it happened, I was like, oh my God. But at the same time, I kind of like it because they are leaving kind of at the top, you know, like they're leaving with, like, there's still some gas in that tank, so to speak. And I like the fact that they're just leaving it there. So I'm actually curious to see how this goes. Plus, you know, like, we've been talking about this, like the Big E singles push, you know, the WWE's been pushing it. Well, I think in order for them to do it, or at least put the perception of doing it, is he's got to be truly alone. So yeah, I don't have a problem with the breakup of the New Day. And you know what? The one thing I really liked about that segment, I love the reactions at the end. Like, I don't know if they were acting or if they genuinely didn't know they were going to get broken up, but whatever it was, you could feel that. And I was really impressed by that.
No, I do very much think that they knew. that they were being broken up. You could really see this because you could also see Big E's demeanor in that vignette where he wasn't completely on board with doing the shake and everything like that. Like he had just come out of that brawl. The other two guys are super happy and he's not all that into it. You can see his characters evolving at the moment. And that's probably a good thing because honestly, Joe, I believe that Big E will be the next opponent for Roman Reigns.
Yeah, I hope that they build that story properly, but that does make a lot of sense given sort of the way that they seem to be positioning Big E right now. So I really hope that is the case and I hope he gets an opportunity. But again, I hope that this isn't something they hotshot and do like next month. I hope they really give this some time.
As far as Roman goes, we saw the addition of another stipulation on a stipulation. I mean, you're a guy, Joe, you're an old school wrestling fan, and you don't like gimmick matches to begin with. Well, for Hell in a Cell, not only, Joe, will this match be a Hell in a Cell, it'll be an I Quit Hell in the Cell match. Two stips, two positives, Joe. That's four times as good a match.
I'm probably going to get some heat about this, but I'm going to say it anyway. So number one, okay, I like this Roman Reigns heel thing.
Me too.
I'm really digging the character. I get the storyline with Jey Uso. It's family. It's sibling rivalries. I can relate to it. But the problem is I just can't take Jey Uso seriously as a contender, number one. I mean, and again, I'm not saying he's bad. It's just that, you know, in 1 week or 2 weeks, he's become the number one contender. And it's like, dude's been a tag team wrestler for most of his career. What's going on here? Number one. And then number two, like to me, Hell in a Cell and an I Quit match at the same time, to me, that's a blow off match. That's a match where it's like if this is going to be the last match of their series, fine. But I just to me, it just doesn't make sense to have this match right now unless it's going to be the end.
Joe, I would argue that this is already over. I don't want to see this match. I saw them and it was a great... Listen, I became emotionally involved and it is so rare for me, probably for you as well. We watch so much wrestling and to become emotionally involved in a storyline, never mind a WWE storyline, which we're inundated with this garbage content, but... The family history here was very good. Jimmy coming out to try to save Jay, throwing his body on top of him, even though he's hurt. Everything was done so well, but it was also done and done. And I'm done. I don't want to see a Hell in a Cell match. Never mind, do I want to see an I Quit Hell in a Cell match? I hate I Quit matches and continually having them say I Quit and the ref getting in the way over and over again with a microphone. Boo. Not interested. It's already done in my mind. We don't need this match to begin with.
See, now you know how I feel about gimmick matches.
No, not the gimmick. Listen, hey, on the other side of things, even though I don't care for Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton, the Hell in a Cell match, the way that they've worked this program, not that I want to see them again, but the gimmick works in that particular scenario. Think about what happened in the last match. You had all of those four legends, well, three legends and Christian, appear and try to find their way into the ring. And they got in Randy's face and they interfered in the match. So because of that, a Hell in a Cell makes sense there. It doesn't make sense in this particular scenario. I Quit does, but we don't need the Hell in a Cell on top of it.
No, I agree. And that's the thing. Like I was going to say pretty much the exact same thing. I'm not the biggest Randy Orton fan, but at least the story behind McIntyre and Orton in a Hell in a Cell completely makes sense. And it's like this is a feud that has been building. So I'm cool with that. The Roman Reigns thing, like it's almost like, yeah, we're going to do Hell in a Cell because, you know, I need to be in the marquee type match. And then we'll add the I Quit thing. I agree. Like, I think you could do an I Quit based on the story of like the match they had at Clash of Champions. But I think the Hell in a Cell, really, I think that's overkill.
Chatting with Joe Aguinaldo. He's one of the hosts of the Patreon podcast, All Elite Weekly. But we're diving back into what happened on the draft edition of SmackDown this week. And Joe, you know, it's funny. We're talking about gimmick matches as we head into Hell in a Cell. And it was announced this week that we're not just having two Hell in a Cell matches coming up. We will be having three. The third one being Sasha versus Bayley. They go to a DQ this week, this past Friday on the show. I have never seen a feud more organically built to a chairs match than this one. But it's a Hell in a Cell.
I love it. I agree with you on the build, but yes, the chairs match I think would have made a bit more sense.
Yes.
And hopefully they don't do like a Hell in a Cell TLC or chairs match, because that would be, again, overkill like the I Quit match. But having said that, at least, again, to a degree, at least this makes sense because you're building, you know, you're building the feud. You're, you know, you've started sort of with the friend thing and then Bailey lays her out. So like, I, even though like a chairs match would make more sense, I have no problem with them being in a Hell in a Cell because of, you know, the brutality of the match or the how it's supposed to be. But yes, a chairs match, I think, would have made a bit more sense on that.
Okay. One final thing before we have to take our break, and it was a return that happened on SmackDown, and that was the return of Lars Sullivan. And you texted me as this was happening, and we're like, I got a theory about Lars Sullivan. It was something you wanted to share. Go, Joe. It's your airtime. What do you have to say about Lars Sullivan and his return to WWE? A very controversial exit, but now he's back.
Okay, so let me just correct you there. It's not so much a theory about Lars Sullivan, and this isn't actually like anything bad about Lars. It's just this is something. It's this the return reminded me of something, and it really bothered me. All right, so bear with me here.
Okay.
So like Lars left the WWE in I believe it was June of 2019. Now certainly he had a bit of an injury, but you know he had been caught making some racist, sexist, and homophobic comments in the past on like I think it was bodybuilding.com, you know, and he got caught. He got fined, and you know he took some sensitivity training. Cool. No problem. I am all about giving people second chances. If Lars has, truly repented, no problem. Right? Okay. Number two, you know, we found out he did some adult films. And again, I am not judging that. That's his business. Who knows? Maybe he needed the money. No problem. Okay. So again, he left in June 2019 and he was out for what? 16 months. And he comes back in a prominent role, taken out, you know, three of your top stars on SmackDown. All right. Meanwhile, I'm going to go back to China, who was a trailblazer for women's wrestling, who broke the mold. She leaves in 2001. And yes, she had some heat, but the WWE wouldn't mention her for 15 years until she passed away in 2016. And they finally induct her in the Hall of Fame 18 years later, like, and as part of DX, not as herself. Now, the last point I'm going to make about this, Triple H on the Steve Austin podcast said that China deserved to be in the Hall of Fame. But if his daughter Googled China, he would have to explain that. Well, Triple H, what if your daughter Googles Lars Sullivan? Really? That's my rant.
Well, I see what you mean. I completely think that you're right. But along with that, there's more to China, right? I mean, China's all based on the relationship that she had with Triple H. Triple H is now married to Stephanie McMahon.
Absolutely. And I mean, I think like, I know that, like, but it just like, that just really bugged me when Lars came back, knowing that he came back that soon. Meanwhile, China, who had actually contributed a lot to the WWE, like to the success of WWE in the Attitude Era, whether you like her or not, again, she was persona non grata for 15 years. That just really bothered me.
I mean, you know, you could also Google X-Pac or Victoria, or there's a very long line of Googles that will get you some interesting photos and video in the world of wrestling. Well, wrestling has always been compared to the porn industry, where people don't get paid all that much unless you're top tier. You do an incredible amount of damage to your body, and you're not unionized.
No.
Boom. There you go. We got to take a break, Joe. We're going to come back. We'll talk a little NXT next. The return of Ember Moon. Oh, boy. That is next. It is Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio.
Take your hot sauce game to the next level with Flavor Lust. flavorless hot sauces made with a complex base of mulled vinegar, smoked paprika, chipotle, and garlic. Enhanced by scorpion peppers, piri piri, and green Szechuan peppercorns. Balanced out with the sweetness of honey and Asian plum to provide a bold level of heat that never burns or overpowers your food. Plus, it comes in a sexy black bottle, making it the perfect gift for any hot sauce lover. Get your bottle today. Search Flavor Lust on Amazon.
I'm Dan the Mouth Loransky.
And I'm Joe Aguinaldo.
And we are the old f**ks, two burnout wrestling fans that have been watching it since the 70s.
But now, All Elite Wrestling is here to make everything old new again.
So what better idea for a podcast to have it covered by two old crusty farts?
It's called All Elite Weekly, and you can listen to it by becoming a patron of Sunday Night's Main Event at patreon.com/SNMEradio.
And you can bet we'll cover the good, the bad, and the ugly. Because we're the old f***ing tough guy.
And as corny as it sounds, I found a thing called Ember's Law. All right? Now, I know, I said it was corny, all right? So, basically, no one's going to walk over me anymore. No one is going to tell me what to do because I'm going to do what I want to do because I'm Ember Moon, damn it.
No.
Welcome back. It's Sunday night's main event, and that was Wednesday night, not the main event, not even leading the show, which it was promoted as, but Ember Moon's return, where she gets to speak. Joe Aguinaldo from All Elite Weekly. Joe, your focus on Wednesday nights is, of course, much more Dynamite, but you have checked this out this week. I tell you, Joe, Ember Moon is still a woman who doesn't know her character, and what a terrible promo to return to. She should never speak.
All right, so I'm glad you said that because I was thinking the same thing, and I generally try to look at the good side of stuff. So, like, Ember in the ring was great.
Sure.
High offense, high velocity, yep. All that fun stuff, great. All right? But when she came out, like, even let me rewind back to TakeOver. When she came out and she, you know, in the motorcycle helmet, I was like, hey, Ember Moon's back. This is awesome. Like, she's great, right? And then she got on the mic. And honestly, you know what? Okay. I grew up in the 80s. Just let me preface this. So her promo to me sounded like, oh, my God. So I thought of this thing called Ember's Law. Now check this out. Oh, my God. It's so gnarly. And I was like, oh, my God, Ember, please work on your promos. Please, please, please. I couldn't listen to her promo.
She's going to do what she wants to do because she's Ember Moon, damn it. What? The thing is, she has such a cool look. And there's actually a strong gimmick, and you could pair her coming back at Halloween Havoc. Maybe if you were to do something with Shotzi and they both got cool, distinct looks, like there's something here. It's just really we go back to, you know, push the strengths and hide the weaknesses. And it's very clear that Ember's weakness is on the microphone. She's tough to listen to. She's not charismatic as far as promos go. And it's also strange that she is returning to the NXT brand, but I mean, she's probably happy with that. As happy as Mercedes Martinez, probably, who is no longer part of Retribution and is back on NXT, as I talked about in the news. Starting things off, though, was not Ember Moon this week. It was Kushida versus Tommaso Ciampa. And unfortunately, Joe, Velveteen Dream interferes. Here's a guy who, man, what do you do with Velveteen Dream at this point? This character is just so stale. This guy is, I have, for someone that I was so excited to see pushed onto Raw or SmackDown at some point, he's worn out his welcome, and I'm never excited to see him anymore.
Yeah, you know what? I think he needs to go back to the drawing board and rethink the character. I mean, like, you know, like I was, you know, like I was never the biggest Velveteen Dream fan, but I appreciated, you know, what he did from an entertainment value. And I agree. He would have been perfect on like Raw and SmackDown a couple years ago. But I don't know. Just lately, it's just not resonating with me. Now, that said, too, and I'm going to go back to TakeOver. I love me this aggressive Kushida. So
right. I
was
rooting
for Kushida all the way anyways. But yeah, like Velveteen Dream, I think, like, again, the guy's got talent. You can see it. I just think he needs to go back and maybe tweak some things in his character. You know, it's weird. It's almost, he's almost become a parody of himself. And I think that's, that's the problem we're seeing.
I think you're very much dead on with that. And you mentioned Kushida, and you know, I wouldn't have been surprised, and I don't know what's going to happen anymore, but it seems to me Kushida finally getting a bit of a push. I actually wouldn't have been surprised if they threw him into kind of a holdover program with Finn Balor, but at the moment, Finn Balor, broken jaw in a couple
Ouch.
Places. Along yep. with that, Kyle O'Reilly injured, but undiagnosed concussion. But they're not saying that. That's just my pure speculation. But the biggest injury on Wednesday night was something that looked so innocent, and it was Ridge Holland just catching Oney Larkin and his leg imploding, shall we say. What unfortunate timing for a guy that is just getting a push and supposed to be going into a program with Adam Cole. And this is just a classic example of one of those really innocent things that happens in the world of wrestling that just goes horribly wrong.
It's like the baseball slide. I mean, you hear like a lot of crazy injuries just come out of that baseball slide out of the ring.
Yep.
Man, this Ridge Holland, Danny Burch match, I love matches like this, like just really, you know, rough, guys that are just beating the crap out of each other. And like, I was digging, you know, Ridge Holland. So like, I saw the article, an article that you had posted on our Facebook page about the injury. And it's like, you know, his ACL's messed up, his ankle's messed up. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like he's out for a while. And that's like, I feel bad for the dude. Like, 'cause I really like this guy.
Yeah, I wish him all the best, and hopefully he gets back to it, but that is definitely going to take a lot of rehab. Someone that has just returned and did so this week is Dexter Lumis. You know, much like I would say this is even worse than the Velveteen Dream character, because Dexter Lumis is a character that didn't even work for me when he was in Impact playing this same sort of role. Now he's in NXT, and Joe, Lumis was attacked by Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes, who I know you enjoy, is the heel. So Dexter Lumis, the stalker, is being booked as a babyface? What?
You got me on that one. You know what? Like, and again, I kind of get it. I'm just happy that Cameron Grimes is part of this because I love that dude. He's hilarious. But yeah, like Lumis being a baby face is kind of creepy. But I mean, you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Let me ask you if you found this creepy, though, because this is I don't know if I like this, or I might like this for all the wrong reasons. Indy Hartwell sending the free TV to Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae. Then both Johnny and Candice like her while watching the TV. Joe, is this a thruple storyline?
I really hope we're not going there.
Like, is she going to pull a Mickey James now and dress like Candace for Halloween to try to seduce Johnny?
I really hope we're not going there. There are certain storylines that don't work in pro wrestling, and that is one of them.
So. No thruples?
Not for me, man.
I don't know. I'm in the midst of binging that show called The Vow right now. On Netflix. They should really maybe start pulling a few, not on Netflix, it's on Crave here in Canada, but maybe they should really start pulling stuff from that, maybe with Seth Rollins, and he can start branding people, and we can get into that sort of cult.
Oh, dear Lord.
I guess you're not a fan of that. All right, well, we'll leave that be. My final question to you, though, because I think Mouth would definitely want to see this. Shotzi Blackheart is the host of WWE's Halloween Havoc. Two things. Do you like the fact that they're using Halloween Havoc as a brand for someone that is an old school wrestling fan? And should Shotzi be dressing as Elvira?
I'll answer the latter. Absolutely, Elvira. You know what? Here's the thing. And I said the same thing about Great American Bash. I mean, WWE is using, you know, their properties, you know, against, I guess, AEW, if you want to look at it that way. Hey, man, I got no problem with that. Like, they own this stuff. It's competition. You know, they can do what they want with it. I'm pretty sure that if Cody had the rights to those names, he'd be using them too. So I really, honestly, I don't have an issue with them using the Halloween Havoc name at all.
The interesting thing is, though, they're doing it on television, and I guess they're trying to make, I mean, I think they're doing it on television on a Wednesday night just to go after Cody, whereas if they were going to do this, and I wouldn't mind either, much like they did with In Your House and have that bit of nostalgia, but then do it as a pay-per-view.
Yeah, no, I can't disagree with that. But you know what? Like, I mean, the AEW did it with what's it called, Bash at the Beach. So
yeah, I guess you're right.
Like, I can't, like, here's the thing. I can't argue it because I know both companies would do it. So I know AEW would do it if they had a shot, and that's the thing. So I can't fault WWE for using, you know, using their properties, using the brands that they own, you know, to try to push their product. I mean, that's just business 101.
All right, before we take another break here, the main event of NXT was Dakota Kai, Raquel Gonzalez together versus Ember Moon and Rhea Ripley. Now, Rhea looks to be spinning off with Raquel. Ember gets the pin on Dakota. Do you think, for her triumphant return, hopefully not speaking, will Ember Moon win the title at Halloween Havoc if she's getting the shot at Io Shirai?
Oh, you know, here's the thing. Like, I wouldn't have a problem with Ember winning, but not that, like, not that quickly. To me, that feels like a hot shot. Like, I want to see more of a build to that before, you know, before before Ember gets, you know, even a title shot, quite frankly. And I'll admit too, I'm very biased right now towards Dakota Kai. So I really want to see
I love
her
Dakota Kai.
I love her. She's awesome. Like, you know, she's a great heel, and yeah. I love that. Like, I love her team with Raquel, because, like, you know, like, sort of the small wrestler with the heater. You know yeah. what I mean?
I think you make a lot of valid points there, and I feel the exact same way. I mean, I never thought, much like the Bayley scenario, is I never thought Bayley would work as a heel, and I never thought Dakota would work as a heel because she seemed to be Bayley 2.0. Well, hey, I'm wrong both ways here, because Dakota Kai is an excellent heel. From that heel turn on through, I think she is great. I think that she would make a very fun NXT champion if she were to take the belt away from Io, because what that would give you then is you'd have Dakota, who can face off against Ember, or who can face off against Rhea, and she is the heel right there, and then you can move Io to one of the other two brands, because I think her time in NXT is kind of come and gone. It's a little stale, her sitting at the top right now, where Dakota would be fresh. And Joe, I'm just watching so much wrestling every week, I'm just all about fresh programs and fresh pairings and fresh angles.
I agree.
All right. Well, there you go. Full agreement for yay Dakota Kai and Ember Moon. Please don't speak. That is what we're saying as we roll on out. We're going to take another break. We're going to come back. We're going to check in with Dave Meltzer. And then, Joe, I've left a good chunk of the next hour for us to dive right into dog collars and anniversary shows for AEW. You good to stick around?
I'm good to stick around.
All right. Next hour is coming on up. It is Sunday night's main event. You're listening to it on TSN Radio.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville realized that some big pizza conglomerates want to make the cheapest pizza. Some want to be the fastest. At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone baked, the traditional Italian way.
It's what we strive for every day, to be the best, not the fastest or the cheapest. Oh, cue the announcer.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Kappa Foods presents 3 premium sauces to enhance any meal. Nothing complements your barbecue like the sweet, smoky, savory black maple. Bring on the taste of Japanese pub food in your own home with Dark Sakura. To add some extra spice, reach for Red Diablo, a sharp Spanish flavor loaded with smoked paprika. Get all 3 sauces now on Amazon. Just search Kappa Foods. For more saucy details, visit kappafoods.com.
If you're a fan of Sunday night's main event, check out WrestlingObserver.com, a daily podcast, multiple podcasts per day, with hosts Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, and a number of others. You get a full library of podcasts dating back to 2005, over 9,000 shows, hundreds of back issues of Dave's Wrestling Observer newsletter dating back to 1991, and so much more. Don't miss out. Check it out today, WrestlingObserver.com.
It's time for the Wrestling Observer Insider. With Dave Meltzer on Sunday night's main event.
Welcome back. It is Sunday night's main event, kicking off hour two, of course, with Dave Meltzer from the Wrestling Observer Newsletter. Dave, we've spent a lot of time on the show chatting about the draft so far. Really, very much almost a non-factor now. Did you pull anything notable out of it?
Yeah, I mean, the most notable thing is that, in my mind, WWE has three acts that are kind of hot right now. And, you know, one is Roman Reigns, and one is Sasha Banks and Bayley, although I was very disappointed in that TV number their first match drew. I was actually stunned. And the other one is the Seth Rollins Mysterio thing. And SmackDown got all three. So I thought that that was very interesting. I mean, Raw still has Drew McIntyre and Randy Orton, and Drew McIntyre is going to be, you know, obviously pushed, you know, as the face of that brand and everything like that with Randy Orton, and they're going to have Edge when Edge comes back. But I was, and I guess that's considered like a real major thing, but that's months away. But yeah, I thought I thought SmackDown got the best of it so far. But even whatever happens on Monday, it doesn't matter in the sense of SmackDown got the top three acts.
That's very interesting. That, to me, would just show how concerned WWE is about that SmackDown rating.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, and that's exactly why. I think that the feeling is that USA needs Raw.
Right.
Fox does not need SmackDown.
Right.
I mean, USA would love Raw's ratings to be higher, but it's by far the highest rated show that they have, and it's carrying the network. And Fox, you know, Fox could tomorrow just go, you know what? SmackDown thing isn't what we think. I mean, I'm not saying they will, but they could. And nobody would miss a beat. You know what I mean? Or when the contract is up. You got to remember, like, when the contract is up, the, you know, the fact that, you know, Raw will be probably getting more money, even though people think it won't. It will probably be getting more money because USA will have to do that because mm-hmm. there'll be other people who will want it on cable. Whereas SmackDown, I mean, they might be able to get more money on cable, but WWE would lose that network exposure and the ratings of that show would like drop like crazy. So, I mean, that's got to be the priority. It's got to be.
Two notable storyline elements that happened were the New Day breaking up and, of course, Lars Sullivan's return. Let's take a look at both of those. The New Day breaking up is not a surprise with me, Dave. I foresee Big E as a future contender for Roman Reigns sooner than later.
I think so, too. And I think that's why. I think that there is... They did not have to break them up, but I think that there's a mentality that if he's doing the comedy New Day stuff, he cannot be a championship contender, although they did not change Kofi Kingston. But then again, Kofi Kingston was not their plan, and mm-hmm. Kofi Kingston was always a short-term thing from day one. Before Kofi Kingston ever won, they already knew that Brock Lesnar was beating him, you know, in decisive fashion. I mean, they never took him as a champion. They gave him a belt, you know, and there's... You know, there's many, many people in WWE who have had the belt that WWE never took as champions, a lot. And he was one of them, whereas with Big E, I think that they, you know, he's got size and he can talk and he's a very good athlete. And I think that they just see that, that's what they see. Would I have done it? No, because there's certain, I would have never broken up that act until, you know, you were forced. It's just one of those things where people, they make people happy and you can, Big E can be a championship contender in that act. You know, Terry Gordy was a championship contender while he was part of the Freebirds, and I mean, granted, they didn't dance around and all, but you know, but they. I don't know. I mean, you could have done it. I would have done it that way, but I get why they did what they did too.
Lars Sullivan also making his return despite all this heat on social media for comments that he's previously made. You know, looking at Lars, the ongoing situation with Matt Riddle, Velveteen Dream being on TV, WWE just seems to be turning a blind eye, or at least making a very decisive decision about who they're going to back and put back on TV.
Okay, well, you have to understand Vince's background on this, okay? You know, you got to remember that in the early 90s, Vince was accused of something, you know, basically the same as Matt Riddle. And in Vince's mind, you know, those charges were fake. So he's going to be very sympathetic in situations like this. I mean, I believe if in the case of Matt Riddle, if Vince believed that it was true, that Vince would probably get rid of him today. I wouldn't say that 30 years ago because with Jimmy Snuka, you know, whatever that was 38 years ago.
Yeah.
But that was a different world. In that world, you know, you always backed your star. I think that's what I believe in the case, in the specific case. As far as Dream, I can't even give you an answer because there's in the Dream case, there is evidence out there of stuff. I mean, it's there. We've seen it. There could be an explanation, but we've never gotten the explanation. And the fact that they've been quiet and people have asked, and you just, you know, like, tell us, okay, if he's fine, tell us he's fine.
Right.
Tell us why, rather than, I mean, I'm very uncomfortable with the Dream situation. I just wish that they would be open, and they haven't been, and that makes you very suspicious. With Lars, it was years ago, and they fined the guy $100,000 for something he did before he was ever in the company. He did apologize, and it's like, do you hold it against him for the rest of his life? You know, I mean, $100,000 for a guy like him, you know, who was probably, what do you figure he was making? You know, he had just gotten to the main roster. When he was in NXT, I don't know what he was making, but I'm figuring it's in the 50s.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like that's not like some slapping the wrist. I mean, for comments on, you know, on a bodybuilding forum, you know, 8 years ago, you know what I mean? That's a heavy, heavy price. Now, you know, of course they were absolutely stupid, horrible things. But if you look at his posting history, and I have, and believe me, I have studied Lars Sullivan, and his posting more than probably anyone, and there's a pattern, not of him just being, a guy who was, look, I get it on Twitter every day, I get freaking, you know, now granted, most of them are not this bad, and I just block them and everything, but if you let people, you know, on an unmoderated forum, you would get people like that, okay? And they're and I hate it. Believe me, I hate that type of stuff. But 8 years later, if they've apologized and they gotten fined $100,000, I don't know. I mean, it's like it's a real. Here's the deal: there are people in that locker room, and they have to make a decision. And I was thinking about this before you brought this up. Actually, this morning when I woke up about Lars, and it reminded me of the Hogan thing. And I'll just tell you the difference. When the Hogan thing happened and he did his apology, you remember the reaction. And yeah. I got it from people in that company. It's like, he didn't, that was a fake apology, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I got a lot of negativity about Hogan. When Lars apologized, I got nothing, okay? Like, nobody said that they didn't, you know, like, that's a fake apology, blah, blah, blah. And essentially, it's the same thing. They both said things that were very, very racial, which has got them in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of like my thing. It's like, look, Hogan paid a price. They did bring him back, but people did not accept that apology and believe it. I mean, a lot of people, and some even vocally, publicly, would shock the hell out of me. But privately, I can tell you that there were those that did and those that didn't. With Lars, I never heard, like, not one person came to me and was just like, that was a fake apology. So I'm going to look at it like, if they're okay with him, and he paid that fine, that is a stiff fine. It's like, you know, going to hold it against him the rest of his life. I mean, if you want to, and if people do, you know, I mean, that's fine. I get it. But don't act like he didn't get punished, because he got punished bad.
As far as the Matt Riddle situation goes, Samantha Tavell has sued Riddle, WWE, Evolve, and Gabe Sapolsky for $10 million each.
Each.
Yeah, over, each.
Actually, it technically says more than $10 million each.
Yeah. Now, the only thing that is new information here that we found out this week are about the canceled dates that happened for Tavell, who's
there's actually a lot new. Okay. Number one is, originally the claim was that Riddle sexually assaulted her in a van once.
Yes.
Okay. Now it's like it was constant. It was 3 years, which has to fit a certain narrative. Because her narrative now in this lawsuit is that she was forced to do this, and when she didn't, she got her dates canceled.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, changing that from one time to constantly over 3 years, and then it leading to, that's which ties WWE in with it. But she did get dates canceled. Now, also, she said that both WWE and Evolve canceled dates on her, but she was still working for Evolve after that date. She worked the very last Evolve show, so the idea that, like, she, you know, got whatever, you know, couldn't work for Evolve. It's like she worked for Evolve literally until the very last show, and then they folded. So you can't say that cost her Evolve bookings. WWE, I mean, it's, you know, not only can you say that she had bookings canceled, but Drake Wirtz wrote a letter to her and pretty much said, you know, that there's an issue with one of the talents, and that's why. Now, could it be, you know, there are allegations that there was a scene that was created by her, and, you know, maybe Drake Wirtz, when he's booking extras, he's not aware of this, and then he's told up, you know, like, no, you can't book her. I don't know
right.
what happened, but, you know, I mean, there are explanations, but absolutely, you know, that's open and shut, and Drake Wirtz wrote what Drake Wirtz wrote. I mean, it was like, I read that, and it's like, that is a, I mean, from a WWE standpoint, it's not a good look. No, you know, no doubt about it.
Let's get a bit of an injury report this week, Dave. Ridge Holland, for something that looks so innocent with catching someone doing a dive, what an insane injury. So he has had surgery on the leg at this point, but he's got to be out for, what, a year?
I mean, it could be 8 months. Torn ACL, broken ankle. But yeah, I mean, I mean, we haven't been given a timetable, but yeah, he got messed up bad.
Wow. Also, yeah. So what's the status on Finn Balor here? A broken jaw. How is it as serious as it's made out to be?
I was told it wasn't as bad as it sounded on television, but it was a broken jaw.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he'll be out for a while too. But I mean, I don't think it's not like it's a 6 month or a year thing, but, yeah, that was a brutal match.
Yeah, and Kyle O'Reilly coming out of it as well with an undisclosed injury.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. 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 I think there's a code word for that.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go to AEW here. Now, obviously, Dave, you were getting berated with messages. I had people messaging me AEW this week on their TV. Several mentions of New Japan, from the reference to the Moxley and Archer match to the appearance of Tanahashi. Hey, gotta ask, because everyone's asking, you know, Harold Mage out of the way, now these two mentioning one another, what's happening? Do we know anything?
I mean, there's nothing, but the door is creaking open. You know, there was a lot of stuff. I mean, there were lawsuit threats and things like that people don't know about. Well, now they do. I mean, I've been writing about it, but that from the New Japan side to AEW. And it was a real bad issue. I mean, there's a reason that there were a lot of very negative comments about certain things with New Japan by certain people last year. But from a standpoint of, do guys, do people in the office on both sides want to work together? Yes. Do the wrestlers want to work with New Japan people? Yes. Are there guys in AEW who would love to work for New Japan Pro Wrestling on a tour for the experience to do G1 or Super Juniors? Yes. Is there ways to do this beneficially? Absolutely. And so maybe that will win out at the end. You know, I mean, the Jericho bringing, you know, Jericho had Ultimo Dragon on. He had Don Callis on.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
True,
Don
yep.
Callis from the head guy of a rival company in the United States in their same country. So, and Jericho is great. You know, it's funny with Jericho and Tanahashi because it's like, I mean, they're so similar to me in a lot of ways. I know Jericho pretty well. I know Tanahashi a little bit and read his book and everything. They're very similar in their philosophies of wrestling, but you know, they did one match together and, you know, of all the people that Jericho has wrestled all over the world, I mean, think about this. Now, obviously, he couldn't get Shawn Michaels to do it, or Triple H, or Ric Flair, okay? We know that. But of all the people that he wrestled in his career, I mean, he chose, you know, Bully Ray, which was interesting, Ultimo Dragon, and Tanahashi. And he wrestled Tanahashi exactly one time. It was at the Tokyo Dome, January 5th, 2020. And, I mean, I just remember afterwards, he just loved working with the guy. I mean, even before I talked to him, I think it was before the match, and he'd like trained a little within like for 45 minutes or something. Because we only trained like I think that he was looking at like you know, all the things. We just trained a little. We're fine. It's like I think that they just have a, you know, similar philosophy. And I think that, you know, look, Tanahashi, if you watch Tanahashi, he's one of the greatest wrestlers that I've ever seen in my life. And I can see why. And he's got, look, Jericho wants to go to New Japan if the door is open. Number one, they pay him very, very well. But also, I think he loves just, you know, I think that, you know, look, the Jericho Omega match in many ways resurrected. I don't say resurrected his career because his career was going to do fine either way, but I think it's the most important match of his career as far as legacy goes, because it proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that he can draw big money and be a big time. You know, it's one thing to be a great worker, and it's one thing to be a great promo, but there are very few guys who can make a huge financial difference that you can look and go, that is proven, there's no doubt. And the Jericho Omega match fits that bill. And you know, Jericho comes from that old school. He came up in the 90s where drawing the house and drawing money and all those terms actually were relevant. So it's those are terms that he grew up with.
Well, I look forward to that door creaking open a little bit, and we'll see what happens next. But Dave, that's great for this week. Observer-wise, what are we checking out?
You know, I already wrote a story about Len Rossi. I wrote a horrible story about Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah, oh, that one I didn't. I read some of that and was just, it's ripped from a horror movie.
It's a horror movie, absolutely. It's, you know, now he's a guy that we will never see in wrestling again. I'm sorry. I mean, if someone books him, it's like, I'll tell you what, like, you know, sometimes I think social media is, it can be very, very unfair and has been for some people, but with him, if a promoter books him, it's like, you know, I don't care who, you know, it's like that one, sorry, that's way, 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 way over any limit that I could ever justify.
So that lovely story.
Also, I got a book out. Plug that. You know, 1997 yearbook. I actually just got my copy the other day of it, like, you know, in actual book form, and I was, like, so happy. I mean, you should see it. It's really frickin', I mean, it's my own book, but it's really good. I, you know, just the way the layout is, the way the stories are, you get the whole year, you get, you know, you get every story together of what's been going on in the year. There's, like, a review of, like, the star ratings of every guy, you know, for that whole year of
match. So, Dave,
quality.
You keep saying year. So it's 19, because I know about it. It's 1997 is the year that you selected for this.
Because of, obviously, because of the Survivor Series story and Brian Pillman and things like that. And those are obviously stories covered in detail, but also the near death of the beginning of the end of UFC, even though they resurrected from it. And the Monday Night Wars in hot, you know, peak, right?
Yep.
I mean, you know, 97, 98 are your peak years of the Monday Night Wars. So, those are but obviously the Survivor Series would be the, you know, if you're going to say one reason I picked 97, that's it. And it's the coverage of the Survivor Series, because we do everything from the start of the year to the end of the year that built up to it, not just, you know, what happened in that thing. Because it's like we'll go back to, you know, things that Brett said. It's absolutely fascinating when you put it all together. So anyway, that book is out. It's at in Canada it's www.amazon.ca. In the United States it's www.amazon.com.
Yep, fantastic. And the book, the name of the book in full so people can search it and get it?
Wrestling Observer 1997 yearbook.
Boom. There you go. Awesome, Dave. Look forward to checking that out, and we'll talk to you next week at the same time.
Okay, have a great week.
You too. That is Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer newsletter, and yeah, check it out. So it's the Wrestling Observer's 1997 yearbook, and you can find it, as he said, on Amazon.ca. For all of our Canadian listeners, Amazon.com. Go to Amazon, pick it up, get a hardcover book. You can actually touch a book and read it that way. I'm sure there's digital copies too. Hey, we're taking a break. We're coming on back. Joe Aguinaldo rejoins me, and we dive deep into AEW, looking back at this week, the Jericho celebration, the dog collar, looking forward to next week, and what seems like a clash of champions for them on their anniversary show. That is next Sunday night's main event on TSN Radio. Thanks for listening to the free version of Sunday night's main event. Remember, you can get an extended version of this show commercial free each and every week by becoming a patron of the show at patreon.com/SNMEradio. Plus, we also dish out numerous other weekly podcasts, including Raw and AEW Dynamite reviews, all patron exclusive, and all can be in your inbox for just $1 a week. Patreon.com/SNMEradio.